Welcome to the Eric Erickson Show podcast, hour one.
Hello, America. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here across the nation this fine Tuesday. The phone number 877-973-7425. I say Tuesday because I don't want you to think I'm pre-recording here or this is a rerun. So yesterday was an absolute disaster, and I've got to begin the show with an apology to all of you. I was prepared to broadcast the show yesterday live from Sea Island, Georgia. I had been asked to moderate an event for the governor of Georgia and was there, was prepared to do my show, tested all the equipment except the microphone. And the microphone was dead as a doornail. Now, this is the exact same microphone I used on Friday. And the only thing that I think could have killed it was TSA, the baggage check. It was checked luggage on the way home from Washington on Friday. And I guess it just took a beating. And even though it was in a case, it was dead as a doornail on yesterday. I had to order a new one. It just came in right before the show. But I ran down to the hotel. I was like, I'm at a hotel. They've got microphones. They do these things. And they gave me a microphone. They were very, very kind. They gave me a microphone. But the microphone, it's called omnidirectional, which means it takes sound from every single direction. So you could hear the air conditioner. You could hear the leaf blower. You couldn't just hear me. So like just to give you an idea of the way these microphones and radio work, I'm right here now by the microphone. I am maybe 3 inches away from the microphone. Now I'm back here, and you can barely hear me, but I'm facing directly the microphone, so you can still get some noise. They're very, very, very precise microphones, so you, like, for example, there'll be ambulances coming past the office, and you can't hear them because of the way the microphone's set up, but the microphone at the hotel that they gave me was great, and thank you for them offering it, but you would have been able to hear, like, the cars down the street. It was, so couldn't do it. Last minute, thank you, Charlie and Jim, throwing the best of. Unfortunately, it sounds like some of the stuff from the shooting in Atlanta last week was in there, which we did not intend. And but I'm here today. Now, the other side of this is because of all of that, my wife is at her cancer scans by herself today. I did not think, and I talked to her about it, and we just both of us thought, given the disaster that happened yesterday and the broken microphone, I should not risk problems and try to be with her today. But your prayers are appreciated. She is getting her scans, quarterly scans right now for cancer. And I really hate that I can't be there. I'm a little bit distracted by it, but hopefully I'll get a text from her soon on the all clear. Now, what a day. We've got to begin. And you know, the one thing is, when Donald Trump was president, like, I knew every day there would be a new show of brand new information because the headlines changed so much. Every time he tweeted, it started new headlines. And with Biden, you can go for days on end talking about the same story. And I'm essentially, I got all the stuff I was going to talk about yesterday, and it's still relevant today, including the horrible freak out over the ABC News polling. We must begin with that. Here's some brief audio first from ABC.
Our brand new poll conducted with the Washington Post, it shows major challenges for President Biden. His approval ratings at 36%, a career low. More Americans now say Donald Trump did a better job handling the economy, and Trump is leading Biden in a 2024 matchup.
Yes, from CNN.
Stark numbers there. Do Biden and Trump have the mental sharpness to serve? 32% of the American people say Biden does not. 63%, 32% say he has the mental sharpness. 63% says he does not. There's me not being so sharp this morning. And then Donald Trump, 54% say yes, he is sharp enough to be president. 43% say no. Karen, that is, you know, that's not a good number for President Biden. 2/3 of the American people say he's not sharp enough to be president.
And yet he's doing the job. He's getting record victories. We got gun legislation. We just had a great jobs report on Friday. I mean, look, this is why we have a campaign, right? This will be tested in the context of this campaign.
Problem here, though, for them is, of course, that he's not getting the credit for all those supposed victories. One last one. This is Donna Brazile.
I was told I could not send the poll around to after 12 midnight. I sent it out at 12:02 because it kept me up, and I thought they should wake up and look at those numbers. You know what's sobering. It's not the age. It's sobering in a sense, George, that the coalition that elected Joe Biden with the historic numbers that we saw in 2020, that coalition right now is fragmented. That should concern them. The second thing that should concern them, of course, is that they are still unable to get a real good, strong message to the American people, not just on their accomplishments, but where they want to take the country. If they're unable to make this campaign from the bottom up and talk to people where they are, it's going to be a struggle.
Yeah, it's going to be a very big struggle. Here's the problem for the Democrats. We are now at the freakout moment where Biden has declared he's running again. You've got Robert Kennedy already at 25%. It sounds like Republicans, if they engage in some Operation Chaos, could really screw things up for Joe Biden in the primaries, even though we're not quite a year away, but still a pretty good distance from when the primaries start. The problem here is the bad press he's getting. Now, you should know about the ABC News poll. It is a poll of all Americans. Not a poll of registered voters. It is a single poll. It could be an outlier. It is of all Americans, not registered voters. That skews things. But the ABC News Washington Post polling shop is credible enough that it has caused alarm bells. The data, this is from the New York Times today, the data has left many Democrats feeling anywhere from queasy to alarmed. Mr. Biden's case for being the pair of safe hands at a volatile moment is undermined in their view if a president who passed major legislation and presides over the lowest unemployment in generations cannot outperform a twice impeached challenger who instigated an insurrection, had been indicted on multiple felonies, is on civil trial accused of rape, and faces more potential criminal trials in the months to come. Exactly. The Post, the survey by the Washington Post and ABC found the president's approval rating at 36% among all Americans. Cornell Belcher, who is Obama's pollster, says it's a trash poll. Every poll you don't like is a trash poll. Every poll you like is the gold standard. The White House is publicly saying it has no concerns. The problem here is that you all know it's true. And I don't mean you who are Republicans or conservatives, but you who are listening, who are independents, who are progressives, who are liberals, you know Joe Biden is deeply flawed. He's not getting any better. It's not like Joe Biden is going to get younger as he grows old. He's not like what the Brad Pitt character in that movie. He's not going to keep getting younger. He's going to keep getting older. He's already missing a beat. This is a real problem when you've got Donald Trump among all Americans outperforming Joe Biden. But there are larger issues here as well. So I was briefed on some polling data among Republican primary voters, a massive live operator poll of Republican primary voters. On what are Republican primary voters, what are they concerned about right now? You know, it's not the culture war. The number one issue of Republican primary voters is also the number one issue of independent voters. The cost of living. The idea that the government is not getting the basics right. And this is the fundamental problem for Joe Biden, the fundamental problem for the Democrats. It doesn't matter what they do that they want to get credit for. They seem to not be able to get the basics right. They can pass all of this legislation, but if people don't feel like they're being helped by the legislation, there are problems. So the Democrats passed what they call the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act. And it turns out now the Inflation Reduction Act was not an act to reduce inflation. They couldn't do that. It was a Green New Deal plan. And what do we have now? They want to ban your gas stove. They want to ban your car. They want to ban your electricity. They want to ban your means of production. They want to ban everything about your life that you like and is convenient. They want to make your life worse. You got to drive a battery-powered car. You're not going to be able to have an internal combustion engine. You can't have the gas stove anymore that you use and rely on when the power goes out. You got to have the electric stove that you can't use when the power goes out. If you have a battery generator outside, good luck. They're going to take away the gas to fire it. The cost of living has gone up. Beef prices have gone up. You know, the Tyson Foods, yesterday on their earnings call said the costs are going back up for them. The costs are not going down. The labor costs are going up. The feed costs are going up. The fuel costs are going up. That's going to impact the cost. Chicken prices have been going down. Beef prices going back down, and now they're going back up. And a recession, by the way, is coming. A recession is coming. With a recession coming, the president already at 36% approval among all Americans, Donald Trump beating him among all Americans, a perception of Americans, a majority of Americans believe Joe Biden is mentally unfit to be president of the United States. That right there is the most damning indictment on the president of the United States, because every time the president of the United States goes out and takes the stand on some issue, he says something stupid. He trips over his words, and after 4 years saying, but he was a stutterer. It doesn't matter. The American people look at it as mental incompetency. They don't believe he is in charge. There are alarm bells going off among Democrats in this poll, because this poll is from a credible pollster who the Democrats have generally relied on to give them a sense of what's going on. And among all American adults today, those Americans say they would prefer Donald Trump to Joe Biden. But for those of you who are Trump supporters, don't get too eager here, because a majority of Americans say they want someone other than either of these two men. A 78-year-old and an 82-year-old running for president of the United States, who most Americans think are mentally unfit. It's not good data for either party, but it just happens to be really bad for the Democrats. Joe Biden thought he could campaign for re-election on continuing some streak of normalcy. We don't want to go back to the uneven, chaotic, mean tweet times of Donald Trump. But does it feel normal to you? The Democrats want boys in your girl's bathroom. They want boys taking your girl's sports scholarships. They want children not to have tattoos. But if you want to chop off appendages, go for it. They want to give puberty blockers to kids. They're upset that a Marine kept people safe on a subway system from a crazy man who was assaulting people. The Marine's the bad guy. The bad guy's the victim. The world is upside down. The rioters are good, peaceful protesters. And we got to care about mass shootings unless it's in the non-white community. Then you're not allowed to talk about it unless you're a racist. The world just seems to go bat crap crazy with the Democrats in charge. And that's what they define as normal. Most Americans do not define these times as normal. They voted for Joe Biden because he promised them normalcy, and instead all we've gotten is insanity from the other side, where boys become girls, girls become boys, and shooters are irrelevant unless they fit the intersectional justice system of the left. And heroes are the bad guys for keeping people safe on a subway system. And the people of Ohio and a derailment accident are to be ignored by this administration while they fund Ukraine. These aren't normal times. And by the way, I support funding Ukraine. But I also think the president of the United States, who promised he would go to Ohio after that rail disaster, never did, should keep his word to the American people and not just to foreign leaders. There's so much to run against Joe Biden on, and we haven't even gotten to the global recession yet. Hello there. It is Eric Erickson. The phone number is 877-973-7425 if you want to be on the show. Real quick, I'm intrigued by a phenomenon I'm seeing. There's a lot of buzz about Robert Kennedy Jr. Now, Robert Kennedy Jr. is not going to be the Democratic nominee for president. What I find fascinating, however, is how Fox News and other conservative outlets are building him up. And I actually have a theory on why some conservative outlets are building up Robert Kennedy Jr. And it has to do with Donald Trump. There is a great freakout happening among a lot of Republicans that, despite the ABC News, Washington Post poll, when you get into registered Americans and people who would likely vote, Donald Trump can't beat Joe Biden. And there is a pool of Trump supporters who align very closely with Robert Kennedy on conspiracies, on the border, on vaccines. They may not know a lot about him when it comes to the environment. I mean, Robert Kennedy is someone who thinks that those of us who question climate science should be put away, executed, silenced, something awful happened to us. So you've got a lot of people there. And if you remember Rush Limbaugh back in the day, engaged in Operation Chaos and pushed Republicans to get into the Democratic primary and sow chaos. Could there be an element within the Republican Party hoping for an Operation Chaos this time? Because most of the people who would do it, more likely than not, would be Trump supporters, and it could hurt Donald Trump. This is speculation on my part, I know. But when you look at where Robert Kennedy Jr. aligns on issues, the people within the GOP most likely to be sympathetic to him, and in fact, the people who are talking about him now, are people who are otherwise going to vote for Donald Trump because they don't like the vaccine. Robert Kennedy has come out on border security. He's pushed the CIA assassination theory for his uncle, John F. Kennedy. He doesn't want to fund Ukraine. He aligns with a lot of people who align with Donald Trump. And if you can convince these people that Donald Trump is secure on the Republican side and get them to go help Robert Kennedy in Operation Chaos, suddenly you've actually caused chaos on the Republican side for Donald Trump. It's a backdoor effort to disrupt Donald Trump's campaign by pushing everybody to go support Robert Kennedy. That is my theory. Because it is very interesting to see. I mean, if you'll recall, before he left Fox, Tucker Carlson, who said he despises Donald Trump and Donald Trump broke everything and we really didn't get a lot from him when he was president, you had Tucker Carlson engaging with Robert Kennedy on television. I see another Fox News article about Robert Kennedy calling for the border to be secure. This sounds to me so much like an effort to persuade Trump voters to go vote in the Democratic primary and do an Operation Chaos. Now, listen, if you want to do an Operation Chaos, I God bless you. You should. Joe Biden shouldn't get a cakewalk, but it looks like Joe Biden is going to get some level of a cakewalk. We'll see how that goes. All right, we gotta switch gears here. Jim, I'll do that when we get back because we only have 30 seconds. But for the rest of you, when we come back, we do have issues on the GOP side we have to engage with, in large part because the Republican Party appears to be taking shape. Lots of polling shows Donald Trump in the lead. Lots of panic among the Republican establishment, and Liz Cheney seems to be doing what she can to help Donald Trump secure the Republican nomination. I'll tell you about it when we get back. Hello there. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number, 877-973-7425. Should you wish to be on the program, you are more than welcome to call in. And, well, I guess I owe you guys taking some phone calls just because the last couple of days of, it's just been a couple of days. We got to talk about the Republican side of things. We've talked about the Democrats and the great freak out on the Democratic side. There's the freak out happening on the Republican side as well. And we're all in freak out mode, I guess, on the left and the right. Everybody looking at polling, the number of Republican establishmentarians who are resigned to Donald Trump being their nominee and losing. And I will tell you that a lot of these people in 2016, and I didn't think Trump could win in 2016. A lot of these people didn't either, and he did. I am in the camp, and I'll lay all my cards on the table for you. I'm in the camp that thinks Donald Trump will have a harder time against Joe Biden than some of the other Republicans out there, but I also think it is possible for him to win, particularly headed into a recession. Say what you will about Donald Trump, but the economy did not suck when Donald Trump was president, but for the COVID situation that nobody blames him for. You head into a recession in the middle of an electoral season, Donald Trump has a leg up on Joe Biden. I think other candidates, younger candidates, would have an easier time against Joe Biden. So I think the opportunity cost would be less. There would be more money to take back the Senate, more money to take back the House, not just to take the White House. It would be very possible. But I wouldn't be so dismissive of him winning. At the same time, my preference is for someone else because I do think we got to go forward, not backward. Now, make of that what you will, but that gets to the DeSantis issue. So I can't really go into all the details, but I was at an event Sunday and yesterday with a lot of high dollar donors who were leaving that event and going to Tallahassee to write checks for Ron DeSantis. His arrival into the campaign season is imminent. What DeSantis is attempting to do is stockpile money. He had $100 million in his state war chest. I use past tense because this morning comes news that Ron DeSantis has handed over control of his state campaign account to an ally. He's taken his name off the paperwork. Why? Because DeSantis must remove his control of it if it is to be used for a super PAC for DeSantis. See, the money that DeSantis has, $100 million, is for his state campaign. So for governor, DeSantis raised $200 million, spent $100 million, has $100 million left over. That money can flow to a federal super PAC, but not if DeSantis is the one who decides where it goes. Why? Because a candidate running for federal office cannot coordinate with a super PAC. A super PAC is an outside entity that can raise unlimited funds and use that to benefit a candidate. The catch is there must be a firewall between the two. That means that the candidate and the campaign cannot talk to the super PAC. Therefore, the candidate and the campaign cannot say, send this money to this super PAC. There is a super PAC out there, never back down. It is a super PAC that was built up by a friend of mine, Ken Cuccinelli. Some of you know his name. They've hired Jeff Rowe, the political strategist. They've hired my friend Chris Wilson, who's been on the show as their pollster. Their focus is ground gaming for DeSantis. They're doing some messaging as well. And the thinking is that this super PAC has already raised about $50 million. Add into it the $100 million from the DeSantis war chest, you suddenly have $150 million ready to go. And meanwhile, DeSantis is stockpiling checks, waiting to deposit them all when he launches and say, hey, I raised X number of dollars. This is what people want to see. I don't mean to talk at the expense of the other candidates. And I need to be very clear with you. If we talk about the here and the now, where things are, where the campaign lies, you and I both know it is Trump versus DeSantis. Nikki Haley is a very good friend of mine, as is Mike Pence. I've gotten to be friends with Tim Scott. I don't mean disrespect to them, but they know the lay of the land landscape. Right now, the conversations are Trump versus DeSantis. And so what must DeSantis do? Because the headline stories out there from a lot of political reporting is that he's doomed, that Trump is suddenly in the lead, that he's not going to go down, that DeSantis can't back down, or DeSantis can't boost ahead. In fact, at Politico today, Politico is one of the biggest boosters of the Trump campaign. And Politico has this story, the trend lines DeSantis doesn't want to see. A new survey of Republican grassroots leaders shows Trump making real gains. DeSantis sitting out as long as he did has hurt him. And I think objectively it has hurt him, but it's recoverable. What DeSantis wants to do is to defy the expectations. So what are the expectations of DeSantis? The expectations, thanks to the media in the last couple of months, have been that donors have fled him. Grassroots leaders have fled him. He can't get support from members of Congress. He can't get support from even the Florida legislature. He can't raise the money. He doesn't have the personality. And he's so culture warrior focused, he can't focus on jobs, the economy, the cost of living. So what DeSantis needs to do is defy all of those expectations. He comes in, makes a big splash. He starts doing a big tour of the swing states. He raises a ton of money from small dollar donors. He comes in with a slate of Republican endorsees from Congress, and he hangs out with people in Iowa. He all shuckses with the people, glad hands the people, has his wife there with him, who apparently has a better personality than him, is more engaged with the crowd than him, more of an extrovert than him. He makes this big splash with all of these people, and he turns the tables on the media. And suddenly, the dynamic with DeSantis is, oh, wait a second, the media's been telling us all these things about him, and with my own eyes, it doesn't appear to be true. And he resets the narrative. The number one thing he must do to reset that narrative, however, is he has to get into the race. And not just get in the race, but get in and raise quickly a lot of money. So Donald Trump entered the race middle to end of November, like November 22nd, I think it was. And from then to now, he's raised about $35 million. If DeSantis gets in and raises in a month $30 million, even $20 million, he looks credible. Now, this is where we shift and talk about the other candidates. If DeSantis doesn't do all of that, if he comes in and he doesn't surpass expectations, if he comes in like Jeb Bush, for example, no offense to Jeb Bush, who might be listening right now, but if he comes in like Jeb Bush's campaign did, floundered around, didn't have what it took, underperformed, underwhelmed, didn't raise the money from small dollar donors, wasn't charismatic on the stage, wasn't good at glad handing, couldn't draw the crowds, didn't get the attention, had a hard time navigating Trump, hasn't figured out how to crack the Trump headlines. If that's the case, it opens the door for a Haley, for a Pence, for a Scott to tell all the donors, hey, why don't you look at me next? A lot of the donors who have gone to DeSantis went to DeSantis because they didn't want to go with Trump. Before those donors go back to Trump, they might look for someone else. There's a possibility. There's a real possibility. But they're going to wait for DeSantis. David Drucker at the Dispatch actually probably has the smartest take on this. Now, you should understand, I've mentioned this before, it is a little bit repetitive, but the issue is the issue is that a lot of the reporters who are writing about DeSantis don't have DeSantis sources. And so to the extent they rely on sourcing, they're relying on DeSantis's opponents to tell them. So, for example, all of the stories about the donors fleeing DeSantis. Well, the donors who fled DeSantis weren't with DeSantis anyway. And so if you read Puck News, you read Politico, you read the New York Times, the Washington Post, you heard about all these donors fleeing DeSantis, and the reality is they were never with DeSantis to begin with. David Drucker at the Dispatch has probably the best take on this. The Florida governor's sagging presidential poll numbers and Trump's increasingly commanding lead have led to countless stories about the Florida governor's evaporating support. Donors and consultants connected to them tell the Dispatch those reports are overblown, though they acknowledge that some are scaling back contributions or hitting pause. I've not heard someone who's a DeSantis guy saying I'm leaving, but I have seen some who are thinking about him having second thoughts, at Eric Levine, an attorney and Republican donor in New York who opposed Trump but hasn't picked an alternative. He added that while the governor is still very viable, some donors are just really curious about his strategy. For many DeSantis doubters, the fundamental question is whether he can take on Trump, and they're comfortable waiting until the governor jumps into the race before deciding whether he's a good investment. People are anxious to see if DeSantis can perform once he's a candidate, added a veteran Republican consultant who's in regular contact with the party's wealthy donors and who requested anonymity. There doesn't seem to be the rushing to his side in the way there was 2 months ago. The pause that DeSantis has undergone, the waiting to get in while the Florida legislature meets. Clearly, a lot of people that gave DeSantis's opponents an opportunity to push out the storyline that maybe he's getting cold feet, maybe he's not going to run, maybe he's getting mopped, maybe they're mopping the floor with him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. if he comes in and defies expectations that have now been built for him by his opponents, and that's the key here, the expectations that DeSantis now has in the media are the expectations built by his opponents because DeSantis' team has refused to talk to the press. If he defies those expectations, he has a real opening. If he doesn't, if he actually matches the expectations, then suddenly Nikki Haley, Tim Scott, Mike Pence, all those looking for an alternative to Trump, they've got an opportunity. So I was briefed by a very, very, very credible pollster. And what that pollster tells me is that the floor for Donald Trump is 25%. Donald Trump will not get less than 25% of the vote. 75% of the Republican Party are open to everyone else. To the extent there's a ceiling, Trump is probably at it, 50 to 52%. It can come down. But there is an opening for an alternative, not a lot of alternatives, but an alternative. The question is, how does DeSantis do when he gets out of the gate? If he performs exactly as the media tells you he's going to perform, he's toast. If he defies those expectations, though, if he surprises everyone, suddenly people are forced to give him a second look. And if the money flows in too, it's a signal that here's your alternative. The Pence, the Haley, the Scotts, the Ramaswamis, and the rest of them, they've got to hope that DeSantis performs as the media tells us he's going to perform. Because if he doesn't and he outperforms those expectations, then it really does kind of become a two-man race pretty quickly. Now, one of the groups that's not involved in the presidential race but is active in encouraging people to support Republican candidates around the country and also conservative causes is Patriot Mobile. They help fund school board races for conservative parents. They help fund the pro-life movement, the Second Amendment movement. They're a great organization. They give you guaranteed cell service. They probably use the same cell towers you're already using. You can use them by going to patriotmobile.com/Eric today, patriotmobile.com/ERICK. Or you can call them 972-PATRIOT. They have 100% U.S.-based customer service. Patriot Mobile is a conservative Christian cell phone carrier. They match your values, and they put their money where their mouth is. As their profits grow, their giving to conservative causes grow. And so the more people who move to them helps them grow their profits even more and helps fund the conservative movement more. And again, the service you get, they use the same cell towers everyone else uses. So it's not like you're sacrificing service. You can even take your existing phone number to them. So you don't even have to change your phone number. Your friends will never even know you've moved to Patriot Mobile service, but you'll know you are investing with a company that invests in the causes you care about. So call them at 972-PATRIOT. Tell them I sent you. You get free activation, incredible discounts, your veteran, first responder, teacher, NRA member, so much more. Or just go online, patriotmobile.com/ERICK. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number 877-973-7425. If you want to be on the program. So I can't believe we're still talking about this after all these weeks, but on Friday's show, again, my apologies about yesterday, the microphone breaking, it's the weirdest thing too, the microphone breaking of all things. But nonetheless, so I couldn't get to this yesterday. On Friday, I mentioned a distributorship for Anheuser-Busch. I heard from one of the owners. What people don't understand is that the distributors are not owned by Anheuser-Busch, and they're kind of furious with Anheuser-Busch. And then, interestingly enough, yesterday was met with another one from a completely different company, same setup, independent distributor of Anheuser-Busch, and they are getting slaughtered. The one has diversified well enough that it's going to withstand it. But I was told yesterday more than one distributor might either have to go to layoffs or could potentially go out of business because of the devastation with Anheuser-Busch. And the Anheuser-Busch leadership is so tone deaf to what's going on here. The CEO of InBev, Anheuser-Busch InBev or whatever it is in Brussels, Belgium. And said basically it's only 1% of their business, it's no big deal. But for the distributors, for the guys who drive the beer to the grocery stores, it's their livelihood. And for the U.S. corporation itself, it's having a huge impact on the company. But the people most impacted are the people from the outside companies that deliver the Bud Light to the grocery stores. In fact, one distributor was telling me he's had truck drivers spit on In one case, somebody tried to run one of his truck drivers off the road. The branding on the truck was Bud Light. He's had people give him the middle finger as they're driving down the road with their Bud Light branded trucks. They're going through rebranding some of the trucks to minimize the numbers displaying Bud Light. Just insane stuff happening. One woke woman at Anheuser-Busch is destroying a company and a brand. One woke woman is doing this. Did this. She's gone now. She's on her leave of absence, and the word on the street is that she won't be coming back. We'll believe it when we see it. The remarkable tone deafness of the Anheuser-Busch people on this, I can't believe we're still talking about it, and yet the fallout continues to happen. Local distributors who tend to be family-run businesses around the country are being devastated, and the arrogance of the European CEO of Anheuser-Busch saying, well, it's only 1% of our business. It's 1% of your business, but it's 100% of the business of your distributors who you clearly do not care about. They may not be your company, but they are in partnership with you. All you have to do is have the CEO of Anheuser-Busch North America, the SEAL CIA person who they call Captain America or some such, all he's got to do is come out and instead of having a ChatGPT-like statement, say, we're sorry, we forgot who our customers really are. Proud Americans who love their country and don't want politics in their beer. So we're bringing you real men of genius. Do that, the controversy starts to go away pretty quickly. And also, say you fired the two people who made the decision, they're no longer with the company, and you've done your damage control. But the damage control you're doing right now is the damage control of people who don't understand why they've had damage done.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.